Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable.
Brought to you by Community Education Arts, a nonprofit organization based in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Alice Cavanaugh Scover, President of CE Arts.
And I'm Sarah E. Morin, Secretary of CE Arts. Let's sit down
at the Roundtable. Next up, the second part of our discussion on Sula by Toni Morrison. This one's a little bit longer. It's the one that starts during lovemaking, so we scroll back up a bit. During lovemaking, she found and needed to find the cutting edge. When she had left off cooperating with her body and began to assert herself in the act, particles of strength gathered in her like steel shavings drawn to a spacious magnetic center, forming a tight cluster that nothing, it seemed, could break. And there was utmost irony and outrage in lying under someone, in a position of surrender, feeling her own abiding strength and limitless power. But the cluster did break, fall apart, and in her panic to hold it together, she leaped from the edge into soundlessness and went down howling, howling in a stinging awareness of the endings of things, an eye of sorrow in the midst of all that hurricane rage of joy. There, in the center of that silence, was not eternity, but the death of time and a loneliness so profound the word itself had no meaning. For loneliness assumed the absence of other people, and the solitude she found in that desperate terrain had never admitted the possibility of other people. She wept then, tears for the deaths of the littlest things, the castaway shoes of children, broken stems of marsh grass battered and drowned by the sea, prom photographs of dead women she never knew, wedding rings in pawn shop windows, the tiny bodies of Cornish hens in a nest of rice. That's probably my favorite one, just because two main reasons. First, it's about female sexuality, and also it has to do with not exactly romantic sexual encounters. There's a more of a negotiation of power and rage in this description of female sexual situations, which I think is very interesting and very rare in books we've looked at in the past and probably in the future. So that's one thing that I find fascinating about it. The other thing is just the amazing, it's just like line after line after line of the most beautiful imagery. Even when the images aren't beautiful themselves, mm-hmm. The writing is so beautiful and so unexpected. Mm-hmm. She wept then is just three words just suddenly in there after these long sentences that are taking you someplace, right? You're on this journey with this thought process, and then it's just, she wept then. Mm-hmm. And then it changes to what she's weeping about. And then the last long sentence that's the description of the tears for the deaths of the littlest things, and then that listing of those unusual but just poignant and broken things is just wonderful. That's such an incredible passage. Now, is it the best passage for our project, or is it the best passage for a future podcast? When we're talking about some other passages, I don't know, but I just love it, you know. Mm-hmm. So those four, I think, are, you know, really incredible. The two that you picked and then the two that I just read.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do love the specificity of the one you just read, like mm-hmm. the tiny bodies of the Cornish hens.
I know, right? I know. And honestly, I read a pretty long passage. It could be broken into two, maybe three passages. I mean, if we picked that one, we could work that passage a lot of different in sections, even, you know, mm-hmm. And take it apart and then put it all back together and think about it that way, so that, you know, the final inspiration is the entire thing. But, you know, when I read it, I think there are parts of that, like I could see a metal artist doing something with the first part of that. You know, that's the circles of steel and the strength and the, you know, and the steel shavings and the magnetic center and the tight clusters and then it breaks. And, you know, I could see a lot of artists, visual artists and 3D and other kind of artists working with those imagery, and then I could certainly, you know, hear some musicians do something either without words, without lyrics, just mm-hmm. instrumental for the entire passage, because there's a lyricism to the passage, but you almost hear music in it. You mm-hmm. almost hear notes and melody and thrumming and drumming, and, you know, you almost hear music in it. And then also, I think writers of poetry and prose could take this into their own voice, if you will, and write something either based on their own personal experiences that somehow, you know, relates to this passage or was inspired by the passage. I just feel like it has a lot of meat on the bone in so many ways, but really beyond just the beauty of Toni Morrison's writing, I can't off the top of my head, and I say off the top of my head, but I've thought about it more than that, I can't think of another description of the, you know, she uses the term during lovemaking. I mean, this is lovemaking, but it's so not talking about what most people think of romantic lovemaking. This is some other kind of sexual encounters, you know. In my mind, this is a very, you know, I don't want to say combative, but there's a negotiation going on in here somehow, and it's a sexual negotiation, and to mention the positioning and the feeling of strength and limitless power and how that changes. I mean, there's something in this that's so unique from a female perspective, and mm-hmm. I just love that about it. So anyway, I don't know.
Sure. I would say probably then after that discussion, I would say that would probably be in the top two.
Okay.
For me.
Okay.
And then I would probably, the one that starts and it goes to the artist with no art form.
Yeah.
Dangerous. I'd probably take that out.
Yeah. I think we could talk about that in relation to some other, you know, passages and stuff like that. I think that's definitely one to come back to in different contexts. But as far as just trying to pick a standalone passage mm-hmm. that somebody could look at, they don't even have to look at the entire book. They don't even have to know who's talking or what the situation is. Just a standalone passage. I think the one we just picked that's kind of long. And mm-hmm. then what would be our second?
My other one would be the end of the book where it talks about the circles and circles of sorrow. And I think yeah. that's because as much as I love the specificity of the one that you just described, yeah. there's something about the circles and circles of sorrow that I think would appeal to a lot of different artists. Mm-hmm. It's something that a lot of us can relate to. It's a little bit broader.
Mm-hmm.
So it's yeah. so emotionally powerful.
I agree. And there's also beautiful descriptive stuff in there, too, that it gives you a landscape. We've got the trees, we've got the leaves stirring, the mud shift, the smell of overripe green things, the soft ball of fur scattering like a dandelion spore in the breeze, all that's there. There's also physical sensation. The loss pressed down on her chest and came up in her throat. That's grief. I mean, we've felt that. We've all felt that. And her eye twitched and burned a little at the very beginning. I mean, that's a sensation. So there's so much in this passage that really speaks to inspired creativity. But I think the strongest thing about this passage, actually, in terms of theme, if you will, is that it is that moment where Nell realizes who Sula was in her life, that this friendship that was definitely up and down and fraught with all kinds of trauma and difficulty, this was the relationship of her life, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the one, the moment where she gets that. And earlier we saw Nell got that, or Sula got that on her deathbed when she wanted to tell Nell after she died that it didn't hurt, you know? So I think this is kind of the mirror of that moment. That was Sula's moment. This is Nell's moment. This is a very powerful, powerful thing. And that it comes at the end of the book is kind of cool because it might make people want to read the whole book. I don't know.
It's true.
Yeah, I'm totally torn. I love both of those passages so much.
Well, why don't we stop with the top two? Because sometimes what we pick for the other ones will determine it.
That's
so
true.
I wrote top two on there, but okay. I'll, all color coded even.
Okay, cool. That's great.
This has been At the Roundtable with Alice
and Sarah E.
of Community Education Arts.
Our nonprofit organization is based in Noblesville, Indiana. You can find us online at cearts.org. We'd like to thank James Weston for writing our intro music and for his technical savvy.
Join us next time
at the Roundtable.